Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. We are experiencing a beautiful day together here on Saturday, the 24th day of the 8th lunation, the 11th of August in 2012 in the Gregorian calendar. And we here at Alchemy of Light, the Alchemy of Light is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today we have an extraordinary opportunity. I am so pleased to be welcoming to all of you the lovely Patricia Corey, taking us on a journey into the crop circles. And Patricia Corey is a very powerful, clear, focused woman in the ascension of our planet and the expansion of all of our consciousness, and has been in this for many years. She has been with the crop circles themselves for 16 years and has been revisiting them every single year. Following her very first experience in the crop circles, she had a direct contact with the Syrian High Council, which prompted the books and the amazing journey that she has been on since, having led many tours, written several books, and has a website, SyrianRevelations.net, which we'll give to you again. But I want to welcome Patricia Corey today, because this is the continuation of a journey she began with us last week. She also has a show here on BBS Radio called Beyond the Matrix. And she started a journey last week that introduced us to the crop circles in her experience. And I am so excited about the messages and the gifts of consciousness that these crop circles offer as a bridge for all of us to begin the journey of exploring extra-dimensional, extraterrestrial reality that is a part of our incredibly rich life here on planet Earth. So I am going to more or less allow Patricia to continue this journey and continue the exploration, because in that hour show, we went so fast. And so without further ado, I would like to welcome Patricia Corey. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Jamila. Thank you for such a wonderful introduction.
It's such a pleasure to have you back here on the Alchemy of Light broadcast. And your story inspires me so very, very much. And the thing about your first crop circle experience that I feel is especially special to me personally is that you responded to a dream, the rich inner world, and then it manifests. And what a lovely message that is to let people know that we can trust our inner world, you know, that they have substance and that they have meaning. And I really appreciate your courage in coming forward and sharing that with us all at this time. And so would you like to how shall we carry this on? I have done a little bit of review of the last hour from your show, and I would like to encourage people. I'll set you up, okay? I'll be a little administrator for this show. I would like to encourage everybody to go to the website that she uses to show us the circles themselves. And the website is Lucy Pringle .co.uk/photos. And that is the website that she has directed us to, that has a fantastic photo gallery of all of these photographs that are the crop circles of the many years. So I would like you now to just give us a review in your own words of your own experience, how you came to this, and then move from there.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this brief because my show last week As you remember, I was flabbergasted at the way the time flew. And in fact, I can't help but believe that as I was talking about losing time in that first formation, here I was on my show. It felt like 10 minutes had passed and I was at the end. And I was pretty blown away by that. Although I'm constantly talking about how we're losing time and how time is morphing. So I shouldn't be surprised. But at any rate, this story is kind of, for anyone who's familiar with my work, by now knows that I had a pretty stellar experience in the first formation, which was the Julia set at the Stonehenge formation in 1996. And the dream that you're talking about took place because I was in a color therapy college in England. And I woke up at 4 in the morning, which is the violet hour, as the Syrian High Council say, and received this really intense message. I was shown a picture, in my mind, of course, of Stonehenge, and then in a field next to it, this huge, huge spiral, which I noted was so much bigger than Stonehenge. And a voice, we all have them, a very powerful voice in my dream said, "This is a lock-on point for interdimensional contact, and it's going to be very important, so pay attention." And it bolted me awake, and from 4 o'clock until breakfast with the rest of the gang at the college, I sat in wonder of what it was supposed to be. And then a series of events brought me into the formation itself. So that's how my experience with crop circles began. I would like to also add that at that time, back in 1996, what little I had heard of crop circles, I understood to be burn marks from UFOs. I remember a story that a UFO had landed in Russia and that it had left burn marks in a park and that people were calling it a crop circle. So I was very limited in my understanding of what they really were. Needless to say, when I got into my first crop circle and saw what it was really all about, it was anything but about mechanical craft landing in the field. So I would just like to, as far as an overview, for those, I think most of your viewers are already pretty familiar with what a crop circle is, so I don't want to get too elementary here. Mm. But I do want to remind people that there have been about 10,000 crop circles over 30 years reported in this world, all over the planet. That is a lot.
Wow.
About 10,000, Russia, Europe, England, of course, the States. That is a lot of pranksters all over the world with wheels with sticks, right?
Right.
And
right.
As we'll go through today, there have been some formations, some days, two or three of the most complex, gigantic, incredible formations come down on the same day.
Wow.
This would require, besides the improbability of any group of people being able to do the artistic, meticulous mathematics of these formations within the 4 or 5 hours of night that England has in the summer.
Right.
It is still utterly, in my opinion, impossible for some of these things to have occurred.
Well, in your first account, for people who want to go to it, go to lucypringle.co.uk/photos and click on the 1996 year and go to July. And then down on the second one in the first column is opposite Stonehenge. Click on that. That is the crop circle she is talking about. This crop circle itself didn't come down at night at all, correct?
No, it came down within 45 minutes in broad daylight, somewhere in the afternoon. And this is verified by the fact that a pilot flew over the field and he was taking someone, a tourist, I think, on I don't know what the destination was, but it flew over Stonehenge. So anybody that's flying over Stonehenge with a tourist in the backseat would say, "Look, look, look, there's Stonehenge," and would not have been able to miss this gigantic formation with, I used to say 151 stones, circles, but I've been corrected to 149. I have to verify that. But at any rate, let's say it's 6, 7, 8 times as big as Stonehenge. So if he were flying over and saw this formation without crashing the plane, he would have at least said to the person, oh my God, look down at that circle, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he flew back 45 minutes later and bam, there it was. So this is one of the more exciting, let's say, verifications or validations of the highly improbable explanation that this was made by human beings, because this is absolute tourist territory. It is peak season traffic. There's a road. There are two roads that go around Stonehenge on each side, and these are highly, highly trafficked road. There's just no way in God's little acre that this would not have been seen if there were troops of humans, highly, highly skilled mathematical genius engineers who were making circles in the crop and managing to do this formation in 45 minutes. So if you're looking at the image now on Lucy Pringle's site, I want you to just take a minute and drink this in, because this was an utterly, here, I'm not even looking at it yet. Let me get there, 1996. I want to also say that I've got Lucy's permission to use her site for these telecasts. She's done a wonderful job, because she has no opinion. She's a cold, and I don't mean that she's a cold person. She's a cold presenter of the fact. Here it is. And without any, you know, this is a real one, this is a not real one, just here it is. This is what I photographed, right?
Now, and what are some of the other signatures of the man-made versus the, I am with you in the camp that these are extra-dimensional, extraterrestrial communications. This, to me, it just speaks energetically to that knowing in me. I feel the presence of the other worlds when I look at these, because they are talking directly to my soul. I feel that go right into my heart. It's beyond my head. My head doesn't need to even know about this. It goes straight into my heart when I feel the energies in them. So to me, that is directly a communication from the higher realm, because the mind and the way we've been manipulated here on this planet, all the fear that gets all caught up in our filtration system and our ability to communicate even clearly with ourselves is a big challenge for anything that's not going along the lines of the manipulation agenda. So when anything pure comes at us, in my experience, it goes straight to my heart. It goes straight in, and I feel it overwhelmingly before my head has even a chance. And then I know this has got something from another realm. This has another level of communication that perks me up. And some of the things that I've heard about the ones that were man-made were, is it true, Patricia, that these do not destroy the fields?
Absolutely. As I go through the presentation, you'll see, and looking at Lucy's images, mm-hmm. the same fields, pretty much the same fields get visited each year. In fact, the farmers have talked to me and said, at a certain point, I just threw my hands up in the air and said, this is bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these are highly visible, like they're just across the street from Silbury Hill. Again, this is mm-hmm. massive tourist location, and they're absolutely visible, and they come down sometimes not overnight, sometimes in broad daylight, and sometimes overnight. And again, that's a four-hour parameter to do these gigantic, meticulous formations. So unquestionably, there is something otherworldly and exciting. And the fact that it keeps going on, it's been so many years now. And despite all the debunkers and the this is a hoax, I love people that automatically say, this is a hoax. Based on what? We know that people made it. Based on what? Bring forth the people.
Mm.
What is it that these man-makers, aside from the drunk Doug and Dave characters in the early, I don't know, back when, why is it that these makers never really come forward? They hang in the cloud of anonymity, and their excuse is they don't want to get caught because then they'll get arrested, which is so ridiculous. Why are they coming forward if they're trying to prove that it's all bogus when people like me and other people come out and talk about the vibrational aspects of the fields and the psychic information and all this stuff? Why don't they make us look like fools and then come out and say, here's the proof, we did them, here we are making them? That never happens.
Right?
Again, yeah. The excuse is that they don't want to get arrested. I don't think that that's a valid excuse. I don't think they're taking credit for all of them. And I don't think that is humanly possible. And they do make some funky ones deliberately, which I'd like to talk about maybe later on in the 2 hours that we're together. Okay. This year, for example, there have been a lot of very wonky ones. And my attitude is, okay, I get it. So they're making them deliberately looking very man-made to instill in us that the phenomenon is over and that this is the reality. And the truth is, I think that there are, by now, they are capable of making some interesting designs. We've seen them do some commercial things, like I think there was one for Suzuki where they put a car, a Suzuki car, in the middle of the field. I don't know if you saw that.
No, wow.
But it took them like a week. People working on this to get it right. So I actually don't waste a lot of energy about that man-made debate because I'm very comfortable with my own experience and my own impressions, and I trust that guidance as you trust yours.
Yes.
So over the years, I go in every year, I listen to what I hear, I pick up what I pick up, and sometimes they're highly charged and sometimes they're very bland and don't excite me. But there's always a sense of wonder. And the wonder is, well, if you're trying to communicate with another species from afar, you want to get past conjecture of, did that really look like a flying UFO in the sky, or could it have been a satellite, and give the species in question more proof. What better way than to slam down into their, well, I shouldn't use the word slam, to impress into their fields of wheat the messages of higher intelligence, and that is mathematics and sacred geometry, right?
Absolutely. And they I think ultimately speak to those who are ready to listen. And I think that the people that the skeptics and all of that, they really are such the minority. I think that the vast majority of people are genuinely curious. And then there's the strong people like yourselves, yourself and those who go and know that these are very important messages. Those are the people who really are connected directly in a very conscious and loving way to the higher communication, the higher communicators. And then the smallest majority at the other end are the skeptics, but they get the megaphones, right? they go and get the big guns of noise, and they are very good at just sending out garbage messages without opening their own heart. And some of them don't maybe even have heart to open. So we can love them anyway.
I wanted to interject that as you were speaking and remind everyone that skepticism is closure to change.
Mm.
And the crop circles are humongous messengers of our reality changing dramatically. And many, many people are just too afraid to embrace that aspect of our existence now. It's like massive change. I mean, really massive. We are going to experience this in our generation, in our lifetimes, hopefully. I'm not getting any younger here, so bring it on.
Nah.
I believe that we are going to experience absolutely the opening of the galactic brother sisterhood in which we belong, and that the veil of the secrecy of that will be disappearing very soon. And the crop circles are this gentle preparation for the human race to embrace that idea. And there are so many people that just are not ready for that kind of incredible change, because the whole paradigm has to go. I mean, imagine, for example, I recently interviewed Dr. Sam Osmoganovic of the Bosnian Pyramid. And in the interview, which I'll put up soon, he said the resistance from Egypt, the Egyptian archaeologists, to acknowledge this was almost lethal. They refused absolutely, categorically, to embrace any possibility that there are pyramids in Europe.
Wow.
Because that will wipe out their whole, aside from their control, their commerce, etc., it wipes out their whole paradigm.
Right.
And for a lot of people, that is too frightening. So we just laugh off the crappies, of which I am one, laugh off these goons that think it's real, and call it a hoax based on zero information.
I think that's very important, a very important thing to reflect on, because I'm, like yourself, very excited, and I have been ready. I came here for this. It's all that I came here for, and bring it on. And there's a process involved, and not everybody is so willing and able to just let go. And I this week was especially explosive. I know of three major meltdowns in the peripheral community that I'm aware of, you know, where there's challenges and people confronting their own personal stuff, you know.
As far as individual people or systems melting down?
Well, the people are the microcosm of the macrocosm, and I feel like our personal lives are pushing on us. You know, here in New England, the cure of being to cure yourself of being responsible for yourself, you just get too busy. And maybe that's not just New England, but you know, at a certain point, you have to stop and look at your own real personal life, your own real personal issues, how you are personally affecting others. This is primary in how we're going to be humans that interact with a higher interdimensional, multidimensional, extraterrestrial, universal community. If we haven't yet figured out personal responsibility and how to be good humans and how to love each other and how to love ourselves, what do we have to offer the cosmos? You know, I feel that this is why so many lives, so many meltdowns are happening in the whole system, because we have to come to terms with the fact that we are that change. We are that person in our individual reality who is going to be personally responsible for making room for this galactic shift. That's in the individual level. It's not going to be on TV, you know. There's not going to be an announcement on the internet that says, yeah, great, guys, the ETs are here and we're all cool now. You know, until we put the guns down, starting with ourselves, then we will continue to need to have things play out for us to learn those lessons. That's the way I see it. So the microcosms crashing, to me, are symbolic and interconnected intimately to the bigger systems crashing. Look at what's going on with our kids. You know, they don't have a sense of where they belong in this world, because nobody has a sense of where we belong in a world that's shifting right now, you know? But we can come together and be real about that and be honest about that. We don't know the answers to that. But we can, you know, really just have a heart-to-heart and go, wow, look at the U.S. can't stop war on anything, you know? We have to deal with that. We have to deal with that to move forward as a culture, to move forward as a human society. I mean, the same story has been playing out forever, and I think that's intimately connected to how we're going to join the universe community. How are we going to join them if we're still killing each other, you know? So I think that these meltdowns are intimately connected to the bigger picture. I really do.
Well, I would like to interject here something that you stated at the beginning of that passage, and that is that there is a lot of denial right now. I'm particularly on about this in all of my messages and work that I'm doing, and that is the denial of taking responsibility, as you mentioned earlier. And there is a huge balloon of disinformation massaging, especially the spiritual circles of people, that the goody teas are on their way, and the ships are hovering, and we are about to be sucked up under the ships and live happily ever after. Or another scenario is they're gonna land at the Olympics, and on the 4th of August, and the Canadian emissaries were going to descend apparently in the middle of the Olympics and make their being known. Now, there's so much wrong with this picture. I'd like to dissect it for starters. Pleiadians, if anyone is interested in that paradigm, are reportedly on the fifth dimension where there is no physical form. So for them to arrive at the Olympics and in a craft and descend would imply that they were retrograding or somehow going backward in their own spiritual path and taking body, which doesn't resonate for me. So for starters, and then again, they never landed, so that one went out the window. But this whole paradigm of the new Jesus, the new Messiah, is the goody.
Right.
And I'm getting really tired of it because I'm seeing a lot of people who are awakening, losing their power to this idea and saying, well, it's not going to matter much anyway because the goody teas are coming. So in other words, stick your finger back up your nose and stop worrying about everything. Think about flowers and butterflies. And, you know, I'm all for positive mindset. I live my life with that intention. However, I am a living, breathing representative of the human race on this planet right now. And my intention is to do whatever I can to help process this planet to a finer state of existence. And that means doing everything I can to stop. I'm particularly involved with animal prevention, cruelty prevention, as you know. And I'm working for the whales and dolphins. And I'm also trying my best to help people raise their consciousness to what they came to do. And it's not to lie back and wait for the craft to come and fix it. Otherwise, we're back in the Judeo-Christian mindset that Jesus is coming. So hold on to your prayer belt and get ready to be involved in the rapture, right? I don't like this.
No, I don't either. It's not going to fulfill the universal mission of soul. You know, if we let the ETs solve it, we're going to be out the wealth of learning how to solve it. And this is something that I learned in my own life over and over, you know, going through some tough stuff. I learned how to figure it out. I learned how to love myself through it. I learned how to make the best of it. I learned how to cultivate the positive mindset, to see the beauty and the gift in the lesson, in the hardest of lessons, in the most painful of experiences. But that was a commitment that I made to go through that and to be the best person that I could possibly be going through it. And for the ETs to come and just save us, we're going to miss that. We're going to miss that as a culture, how we came together, and rose above our skin color and rose above our religion and rose above our, you know, perceived status as one or the other. We're going to miss that opportunity to really grow the heart of the human. And I think that's the whole point. I'm so totally with you. That is the point, to come here and make the world a better place and do our best in it. And some people have, you know, the most important job, I think, is mothering, right? The people who are taking care of our kids, that is such an important job. They are not in fathering, parenting in general, just that those who are taking care of our children have such an important job. They're not going to be necessarily making YouTubes, right? But their job is so important. Every single job is so important. And so I am with you. If Jesus came, we would, you know, miss a big opportunity. So I don't want him to come. I don't want to be sick. I want to save ourselves. I really do. I really want to learn how to love each other.
The thing is that with the Savior hypothesis, we completely go into passivity. It's very it's really kind of a great way to silence the whole spiritual community. Just throw them a bone. The ETs are coming. You don't have to do anything. Kick back, get high, Hare Krishna, and you'll be soon scooped into a crab. That is a great way to silence a huge voice on this planet, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly efficient, and it works really well with the television. It works really well with the idea that food just happens because we go to the grocery store. You know, it's all part of that same massaging of the lazy, the slothful human, because people have set their goals so low. You know, they aspire to the lowest common denominator and they win. And then they don't have to do anything. So then the savior idea is great because they still don't have to do anything. They can still win. It's right in there, you know. We don't have to do anything. It's already fine, you know. It's really part of the whole disconnect of the planet itself, you know.
Fortunately, there are many, many people who are not buying into that and who are working tirelessly for many causes, including helping people stand up against the tyranny that is currently racing around the globe. So we need to stand tall, stand together, and just keep pushing it through, pushing it through, pushing it through. And that is what we're doing here today, trying to help people get a handle on some of the more exciting aspects, because we certainly have enough to think about with all the problems and the darkness and the disharmony on the planet. It comes back to the crop circle phenomenon being such a positive, exciting, mystical thing. And that's why I invite people to get into these fields, because it's life-altering, without a question. Life-altering.
That is fantastic, and I agree, because there are so many goodies. Oh my God, this whole planet is just rich with magic. Can we go to that crop circle you left us with last time? I think it was 2000 or 2001, and it was a picture of a face, and it had a very, you remember the one?
The chill boy. Yes, I kind of wanted to focus on that. If you can let me just guide everyone to that, because I wanted to just mention that on my show we ended up in 1997, and I made a projection into the 2000 experience, but there are a few things I wanted to point out before 2007. Sorry, 2000. So I just want to get people to quickly go. By the way, some people wrote the last time and said, how can I look at this site? I'll lose the radio communication. And what you've got to do is open a new window in your browser. So you've got two browsers open simultaneously, two windows open simultaneously. All right. So I just wanted to say that when I went back in 1998, what I found was a number of crop circles that were, they seemed to be depicting, there were lots of wheels, lots of machinations. It seemed to me like we were being shown gears or something of that nature. And I got into a few of these. I wasn't terribly excited about them, but I did want to show them to you before I move on, because it's all a thread. So I'd like people to click on July 1998, and you will see in the third row, the first image on the first row says Stockbridge. I'd like you to click on that image. Well, I didn't get into this.
In July in 1998?
Yes, July 1998.
Okay.
I didn't get into this formation. I believe it was mowed down rather quickly. But I'd like you to look at it and see if you agree that it seems to be some sort of a, depicting some sort of a gear or something mechanical. And there were a number of these types of, doesn't it look like some kind of a gear or?
It reminds me of the Mayan calendars, you know, how there are three and they all have like gears that are interconnected to each other. It reminds me of that for some reason.
Well, in fact, the Mayan calendar, of course, comes up later on when we'll get to that. Maybe not this show, but the Mayan calendar is one of the important symbols that keeps coming down in the fields. But at any rate, in this 1998, I didn't see that many formations. Nothing really rattled my cage that much. I just got this feeling of being shown mechanical aspects of the universe that were beyond my comprehension. Mm-hmm. And one in Stockbridge, that was a very powerful, neat crop circle. And I did get into... Where is it? Hold on a minute.
So these are in the same fields, mostly reoccurring.
That's interesting. Yeah, as you see, this is why I wanted to bring this to your attention, because the farmers, poor people, I mean, they're just like, they're so exasperated because year after year they come back. And this is a problem because people stomp all over their fields. They lose a lot of revenue from the wheat that they can't harvest. And obviously it's damaging to the crop itself. And what you asked me was, is it... Do they come back? What was your question earlier?
Well, that they come back to each the same fields reoccurring.
Yeah, they come back sometimes. There have been cases where the year after, you can still see, as the crop grows, you can still see a subtle imprint of the formation from the year before, which is very, very exciting.
Wow. That's a lot of electromagnetic energy or something that penetrated the cell, the cellular structure of the soil.
That's right. Well, with all the theories that there are, the microwave, the electromagnetic alteration, one thing is for certain, we have proof, we have scientific proof from people who have done research that there is molecular shifting in some of these crops, in molecular alteration in some of the crops formations.
Wow.
And this is cannot be explained. So I actually read an article once where so-called human... I have to laugh. So-called human crop circle makers claim that they had a microwave device that they carried into the formations when they did them. And they zapped the...
Wow.
The crop with the microwaves to get the charge on it to fool people. It's like, how? For what? What is your motivation? If there's a big chunk missing. It's like the missing link.
Doing
all this to hoax people, when are you having your day in court where you're showing yourself and saying, ha ha, ha ha ha? Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, where's your weapon there? Your tool. That's
but you know, somebody goes to great lengths to dispel this phenomenon.
You gotta have quite an imagination to come up with that. I mean, wow, microwave wand.
Microwave into the crops to zap them so that people would find microwave molecular alteration in the field. But at any rate,
right.
What I would like to say at this point is I did ask the council, since they came through to me after that wonderful experience in 1996, what is the actual way that this is happening? And again, I've chosen to speak about this after 16 years because I've always, my work is to help people find their own truth and not impose mine on anyone else. Mm. And in the case of crop circles, any serious researcher or experiencer, and I say serious because there are a lot of people making off-the-wall claims, it's definitely this and it's definitely that, and that takes away people's free will to have their own experience. So I would like to say that my experience and the information I was given is that these images are beamed in energetically on an electrical pulse, and the watershed beneath the earth draws it down magnetically.
Huh.
Council said it's really very simple. We work with earth energies, and we just send it in electrically, and then it's interact with the watershed beneath the earth. And that's very interesting because that explains... so much about the speed with which these things are done, right?
Like a weaving of the energy from the electromagnetic energy weaving with the earth's water, with the wheat as the medium.
That's right.
That's beautiful.
Many people, one of my favorite crop circle researchers is Andy Thomas, who I mentioned on my show. And he stays very neutral, too, and says the theories are.
Mm-hmm.
And he also talks about the watershed being very important, and that might be one of the reasons why so many crops come down in England, because the water, you know, a lot of England was underwater before. Right.
That's very interesting. And I think the neutrality is really key as we move forward in all these explorations, because we don't really know. You know, I feel like even our most sophisticated body of knowledge now is just so barely cutting the edge of it that we really don't know. And why not join the wonder of it, you know? And just
that's a very good point. I don't know if I want to know. I love the wonder,
yeah.
of, you know, especially because I bring people in and watch them experience it. And there's that moment of being in something bigger that defies anything you've known, something mm-hmm. bigger than your reality before that moment. Mm-hmm. And it has no definable explanation. It just is. And there are those who say, well, I know exactly how this is happening, and I, you know, it's because of balls of light, it's because of, one earlier researcher said there were communications for him, and they stopped because he'd gotten the answers. And it's like this kind of human ego is very flawed. Mm-hmm. These are for all of us, especially those of us who get there, but they're not limited to surely the people who can manage to get there. They are something being imprinted on human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to imprint human consciousness to the possibility of a higher consciousness than to use symbols, sacred symbols, that we work on deciphering.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to the images on this, I just wanted to show you that, in fact, here's the picture of the car on the field. It's Eastfield Alton Barns in August 1998.
Okay.
So the arguers for the man-made ones say, we made the car. This was made as an I think it was as an, oh, there you go. It was commissioned by Mitsubishi and made by a group called Team Satan.
Devil's circles, right?
Yeah, it says it took all day to construct, but I've heard that it took much longer than that, so who knows. But that definitely would qualify as a man-made one.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they got straight lines pretty good and the circles are okay. Okay.
Openly, I mean, there was, you know, you've got that element of time.
Mm.
Crop circles that are made in 45 minutes or less, crop circles that come down in the daytime, and I'll be talking about Chill Bolton in a minute, right in front of one of the most protected areas in the fields of England, the Chill Bolton High Security Observatory, and these gigantic crop circles come down right in front of it. There are cameras, for goodness sakes, right?
Wow. And they didn't catch anything on film at all?
Not a thing. Oops, I closed the Lucy.
That's really interesting. So I think that on another level, too, the whole idea of mimicking nature is really natural, too. Like, if these guys who felt this need to go out and, you know, show the world that man can make a crop circle, you know, great. It's just that there's room for all, right? Maybe we can just make room for all. They can
well,
make
it's
them.
Still consciousness.
It is. It's still consciousness, and they had the experience of trying. And how many of our great inventions have been nothing but mimicking nature, right? That has been the cue for humanity to try to fly, to, you know, try to make a big castle of some sort or whatever, built on something we've learned and experienced in nature. We're always mimicking nature, so.
The Syrian Council, in a session that I was doing, a channeling session, said, you know, you may find it irritating or negative that there are human beings making the formations, but they are the ones who are answering us.
Oh.
That's profound. I didn't think of it that way.
That's really interesting, and that actually inspires me to be a little more proactive on how we might respond, because do we really want this to be our response, a Mitsubishi app? You know? yeah, we get it. You want to buy a car, and they're, you know, pretty advanced. They probably don't need it. You know what I mean? It's like,
all right. Really interesting. I would like to now move people up into 2000.
Okay.
And talk about Jill Bolton. In 2000, before the year before the face came down, where is the image? Hold on.
Okay.
Should be August 2000. This was the year that I almost lost my brain. The energy in the fields was something completely... Look at these designs. Look at August 2000.
Wow, look at that one, Woodboro. That's intense.
Woodboro is the one I want to draw your attention to. So please click on Woodboro in the August 2000 segment of the site. Now take a look at that.
Amazing.
This is the design inside a sunflower.
Wow, a sunflower field?
No, the actual center of a sunflower.
Oh, the center of the sunflower is the design, okay.
Which is, of course, the great creator, the ultimate sacred geometrist is prime creator. Look at this and tell me, this came up again on a hill. Tell me, please, how this could have been done by humans. I'm more than happy to know.
Wow.
One of those people in that picture might be me. The person on the outside to the right walking in, I think that might be me. But I'd like to talk about the energy in this.
Please, please. That looks like it's electric still.
It was so staggering, the immensity of it. And there was a sense of reverence. Like, do I really want to even attempt to enter this sacred space? How in the world am I going to enter here without disturbing this beauty? And I started to cry. It was overwhelming, this formation. And every point, the reason why I think that's me is because I kept trying to find a way in. And I just cried. And the crying was of the joy, the immensity of this beauty, this unquestionable, in my opinion, of course, otherworldly, magnificent display of consciousness. And I walked around the entire circle, call it a circle, I mean, this is a gigantic formation. I walked around it about three times. I just couldn't find my way to go in. And finally, when I did, I laid in that epicenter. There was a little tuft of, you can see it, a little standing tuft. But look at the meticulousness of this formation. Because some of the later ones, the more recent ones, lack, in my opinion, the dynamite of such a thing. I mean, this is, in my opinion, probably, well, it's going to be really hard to say my favorite, because that is going to always be my first, where I lost my virginity, as they say. But this one here, I am hard-pressed. This also came down overnight in 4 hours, maximum of work time.
Wow. And what part of England is this one? In Woodboro, Wiltshire?
In Wiltshire, which is where most of the ones that I visit are in Wiltshire. So this is the hub of the crop circle phenomenon, although, of course, there are others that are outside of Wiltshire. But you've got Avebury, the triangle is Avebury, Glastonbury, Tor, and Stonehenge form a triangle. And say 70-80% of the formations in England come down within that triangle.
Hmm.
And Wiltshire sits right in the middle.
And these are just the England circles, to be clear, that These are actually a global phenomena that virtually most continents report having this phenomena as well, but we are focused on the ones you've been experiencing in this triangular area, correct?
Yes, there are many crop circles all over the world. Germany gets a lot. Netherlands gets a lot. Again, water. It really matters to me. It really impacts me that that's the information I receive from the council. There have also been ice circles formed on the middle of ice fields. So no tracks out to the ice, which is also exciting. But this one here, this is what I call the big kahuna of crop circles. How do you feel about that?
That is stunning. The precision. My mind is automatically drawn into the precision, and I follow the circles around and around and around. And then when I step back a little, I see the detail, and I start to see the little triangles, and I start to notice how each line is exactly the same geometrically spaced as the one before it. Every single one is precise. There's no miscalculation
this. Of course, you're not getting a perfect view because the photo is not directly overhead of the site.
But I can still clearly make out the wave. It looks like a big wave, you know, going around and around it. And the precision, even though it is not, of course, exactly over, it's obvious to me that it is very, very specific and very clear. Each one of those little triangles that is the end of the flower, it just speaks for itself. It's its own little seed, its own little breath of life right there in that perfect place. Whenever I see these, I want to draw them. I want to draw them because they just are such an experience of trying to draw something so precise and intrigues me, you know.
It's hard enough to imagine drawing it precisely on paper. Imagine drawing it in a field in the dark. Right?
Right. With my magnetic sphere and my planks under my feet. Right.
And a microwave device to fool the crop circle investigators.
Right, right. And my planks are going to be really precise on this one. You know, I'm going to be, you know, dancing a lot on this one because we got a lot of little places to smash down there.
I was very honored to get into this formation because it was late in the season, and I believe that this too got mowed down very quickly. One of the things about being a crop circle experiencer, I don't want to call myself investigator because I don't do much left brain work when I'm in these formations. It's just what I feel. Mm-hmm. And it's always just a celebration when you get into one that's fresh. And then you find out that days later, it's gone. And you just know that you were in that, what we call temporary temples. You were in that temple, in that dome of energy for that moment, and then it was gone. And it's something remarkable. I spent hours lying in that circle in the middle. And I don't want to say I lost consciousness like Stonehenge because nothing will ever, ever be like that. But even here, I couldn't detach from this. I couldn't separate myself. It was as if these petals were enclosing me in that circle. If you look at it long enough, you start to get the three-dimensional image of these concentric circles starting to move. Just looking at the picture, right?
They definitely move. They absolutely move.
And I was feeling was them moving like the petals of a lotus and just coming up in it and enclosing me in some incredible loving energy. It was a remarkable, remarkable circle.
Did you have visions in this circle, or was it?
Go ahead.
Is that common to have visions in the circles, or some you have, or some don't? Like in your experiential toolbox, if you will, or your experiential logbook, are visions common for you?
Yes, I'm a clairvoyant, and I hear, I'm a clairaudient as well. So I have a number of skills, which I'm gifts, I should say. And so I'm really picking up all kinds of impressions. And some of them, for people who don't have the gift of vision, it's hard to explain really what that's like, because you've got to free your, you've got to just free your physical eyes and relax enough to allow these images to float over the conscious sheath or screen of your mind. And in this one, lying there, I started to feel like, well, we'll start with clairsentience. I started to feel like that center was sinking. And this happens to me a lot in crop circles. It was sinking down into the earth, and then the outer petals started to come in and close me in something like the embrace of Gaia. The colors, it was like being inside a kaleidoscope.
Wow.
And so there were colors, and then as I was lying there, I felt that these images that were psychic images of these petals embracing me were refracting the light of the sun. So I was getting rainbow images of these petals around me. And I was alone when I was sitting in that circle in the middle. I was alone for about 2 hours.
Wow.
So like being in the womb of Gaia, it was just utterly remarkable. And then I heard a lot of sound, and I hear a lot of sound in the crop circles almost always. Mm-hmm. And in this one, I was hearing very angelic music. Mm-hmm. In fact, I thought somebody was playing.
Wow.
So mine tries to decipher what's going on, and I thought somebody was playing a CD for a minute because I heard this angelic, wonderful music. And then I realized it's just in another time and space, and just to relax into it. And off I went. And there's this passage where I talk about being out of body, where you're no longer even aware of seeing anything. You're just in another complete space. This happened to me here. Differently from Stonehenge, where I was experienced becoming sound. Did I mention that on the first show?
You did, indeed. Yes, you did.
I became sound, and it was like woo, like pop. I was out of the dimension. Here, it was just this nurturing kaleidoscope effect of rainbow colors. It was somebody told me once, "You don't even need LSD, do you?" Most definitely not.
Bless your heart. I can relate to that very much.
All right. Now, what's very interesting here is Woodboro was reported on August 13th. And that isn't necessarily for sure the date that it was made, but 99% right, because every day Lucy Pringle goes over the fields with her plane. Huh. Every day there are researchers flying over to take photos. So that one came down. And the same day, August 13th, comes down or is photographed the next photo, which is to the left of that, which is called Chilbolton, Wiltshire.
Okay, the long one. Wow, look at that's incredible.
This crop circle was huge, and I didn't get into this one. But it was in the same field that we're going to talk about in the second hour of your show, which is the Chilbolton face. So here this comes down, this gigantic formation, and it comes down the same day this gigantic one that we've been talking about comes down. Now, seriously, how many crop circle men would be working in the fields? You'd have to have like an army of people working, even if they had the technological possibility to do this, right? These two things in the same day. And somebody asked me what I thought about this one, and I said, it looks like the big splat theory. Because I had Michio Kaku on my show years ago, and we were talking about string theory and different theories about the creation of the universe and parallel realities, and look at this formation. And he said one of the new theories, we call it the big splat, it's just let me think, what was his exact language?
One of your books was with him, or featuring him and a couple of the other leading thinkers, is that correct?
Yeah, it was a reproduction of the interview he gave me on my show.
Oh, okay.
He talked about the big splat theory as this universal mass energy just blasting apart, and rather than the big bang,
Big splat.
But this is just reminds me of the big splat theory, and it definitely seems to be talking about if you look at it, because when you really investigate the formations, you really start to ask yourself, what is being shown to me besides the beauty here? Mm. And you've got what looks to me like a sun in the center. Mm. That is the symbol for the sun in our astrology. And these two parallel universes on each side in fractal formation. But what's very interesting is this came down in the field in front of Chilbolton Observatory. Again, no one saw anything. No one filmed anything. In a highly restricted area, that is just outrageous.
What is the Chilbolton Observatory for? Is it, what are they observing there? Is it a space observation center? It's obviously a government facility. Is that correct?
Well, it's a telescope. It's a telescope.
A telescope. Okay. I just wanted to. I'm just trying to get a picture of an observatory, what telescope or offices or you know.
It's a research center and it's an observatory, doing experimentation for. We're not quite sure what they're doing actually, but.
That was pretty much my question. What are they observing there, okay?
They're certainly not observing anything that's coming down in front of their cameras because...
they missed this one.
They're pictures. Yeah.
The concentric circles also really speak to me. And the something that's really consistent in these circles is the symmetry. You know, they have the same designs on both sides, and they're precise, they're exact. And this is an awful lot of detail to be exact on both sides. You know, the splat is very elaborate, and all these little rings, and, you know, perhaps that's multiverses and multiple suns and multiple, you know, holograms forming all at once or something.
Right, but what I'm fascinated by is that the idea that it seems to be speaking of parallel realities or parallel universes, which is try to explain that. If you were given the assignment to explain in art what a parallel universe would depict one, and then ask yourself if that one comes close to depicting it. I've just found my notes about the observatory, and I'd like to read it. The Chilbolton Observatory in Hampshire is at the cutting edge of world-class atmospheric science, radar, and radio research. Its state-of-the-art facilities and instruments help scientists understand more about the climate and its effects, and how the atmosphere affects communication systems. Does that sound like it might be government-funded?
That sounds like a heart facility.
Operated by STFC, which I don't know what that means. Chilbolton is also used to measure and evaluate transmissions from global navigation system satellites.
That's too funny, and they missed the crop circle. Well,
the interesting thing is that according to a person... Are you laughing?
I'm laughing. That's hilarious. That's bloody hilarious.
So in this highly, I would have to venture, highly secured, semi-military research center, all these crop circles have come, these major formations have come down, and nobody saw, nobody, nothing. Darcy Ladd, who is the manager of the Chilbolton Radio Observatory, did an interview with Colin Andrews, who is an earlier researcher who I had the pleasure of listening to years ago, and said that the image, the splat image, appeared suddenly on the morning of August 13th. And he said that there was no unusual activity seen that morning in the field, no aircraft. But he said that Chill Bolton does have security cameras, but they're not equipped for night vision surveillance.
Oh, please.
I'm not joking.
Oh, please. Oh, please. I know, I'm glad I'm sitting down. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
But, you know, I thought, how cool is that? The whoever's making the formations and would like to think that these are higher beings are like, okay, well, would you like it to make to us to impress you more? How about if we put them right down inside a high security telescope research center?
Absolutely. Well, now, what would our message be here from our friends in high places? You know, because they are obviously the keepers of the keys in some ways in regards to the deception. You know, in the conversation of what is going on in our skies, what are parallel realities, what is the nature of our universe in general, you know, I believe we're probably of the same mind that there's an awful lot that is not told us. And instead we get these bizarre descriptions like you just read. That is such a great, great example of some propaganda that makes no sense, but it sounds really important. So the young mind goes off and thinks it knows something because it's heard something that sounded really important that was just a bunch of googly gawk, but you don't know it's googly gawk unless you stop and think about it, you know? And these weavers of deception are, they're counting on us staying in that limbo place that we don't think for ourselves. And as soon as you stop and think and you go, wow, well, wait a minute, you know?
I'm stopping and thinking. This is what my job is as a teacher on this planet and as a investigator into these phenomena. And many people are as well. And I think that it's very almost comical in a beautiful, ironic way that the creators of the formations would put down these undeniable, the ones I'm going to talk about now, the big splat, which is what I affectionately call it, and then the face and the strip, which has been called the Persian carpet, which we'll talk about in a minute, right inside these walls, right inside these fences, and have these these people say, don't know, no clue, didn't see anything.
Yeah. Well, geez, our guys with planks were really fast this night. You know, they just slipped in and slipped out.
Because this is very exciting. I mean, there are three options. One is that, I mean, let's play it out.
Okay.
One is that they're man-made by the people who work at or affiliated with the Research Telescope Observatory that's studying atmospheric changes.
Right.
The other is a bunch of very talented engineer guys with microwave devices snuck under the fence and did it.
Right. And under all their cameras and everything. They were really fast on this one. Okay.
Exactly. The third and more logical explanation, and this is what's beautiful, the more logical explanation is the more far out explanation, which is that some higher form of consciousness just zapped it in.
Right.
And was like going, okay, try to get out of this one now.
Right. It's beautiful.
Really delightful. And I just wanted to share it with you because with the people that are listening, because it is in position where we're going to see the Chill Bolton, the most, probably the most awesome of all formations, the Chill Bolton face I'm about to get to. But there are another couple of really beautiful ones here. I'd like you to look. Just looking at Woodboro in that small thumbnail, it still moves me to high places.
Yeah, that was the first one that draw my eyes. Like, wow, look at that.
Yeah, that is just awesome. All right, so under the Chilbolton image, you see West Overton Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I was gone by then, so I didn't get into this one, but I do want to make a note that this is a seven-sided star.
Wow.
Seven-sided stars have been, they're very important to the Druids. They've been called elfin or fairy, connectors to the fairy realm. But it is very, very difficult to draw a seven-sided star.
Wow. And that is perfect. That looks
perfect. And in fact, anyone who knows anything about alchemy knows that the seven-sided star is decisively known as the alchemical symbol. So I thought that was of note. Very beautiful. Really perfect. And again, compared to some of the formations I've seen lately, this kind of crisp, powerful perfection I'm not seeing in the field.
That's what you were mentioning last time, that there definitely seems to be a waning of this particular art form, and that you see it moving more to our sky, that there'll be more sky paintings, sky communications, sky formations that will be serving the same purpose. And I think that's an interesting thing, because we have such a journey in our skies with all the chemtrails, and it's different wherever you're at, but I have certainly noticed an increase in ships in the cloud formations, and an increase in the way that the spirit beings use the chemtrails. There is an awful lot of activity going on in our skies. I have noticed a radical increase in the last 2 years in particular, but even in the last 6 months, I find myself stopping and looking, and I am seeing the ship in the cloud. And it is right in front of this, you know, I call them chem smudges. You know, they provide the background. They make these screens that highlight these incredible messengers that I feel are directly talking to all of our souls right now. I really feel that is what part of that message is for me personally. But when you were saying that you felt this was moving from the earth to the sky, I really clicked on that, because I see that happening. And, you know, I feel like as our DNA activates, as we become more alert, as we become more open in our hearts and more embracing of the unknown and more at peace with the wonder of life and easy with not knowing, then we'll be able to just see more of these things, because we won't need to judge it, we won't need to put it in any boxes, because we'll just not need boxes, you know? I feel like it's all part of the same ascension, which I feel like is actually happening, you know? There's no getting around this one, really.
And the thing is, the council gave me that information about the sky and said that the introduction of these images all these years to field still remain with a very limited number of people, but it's enough of an introduction that the global consciousness can start to embrace it. So it's done its job, but now we need to be able to reach the entire global population, and the sky is the screen. Watch the sky. And in fact, there are several things going on in the sky, craft and all of that, but many people are noticing undeniable full faces, distinct faces. It's not Joni Mitchell, I looked at clouds from both sides now. Distinct faces, distinct features. I recently saw a Native American face in the clouds that was so distinct, it was scary. It was not, it had the feathers, the whole bit. And it was it was not like, oh, wow, how neat that looks like. It was as if I was looking at a face.
I've experienced that too. Absolutely.
And this is happening more and more. And I would like to add that I've just come out with a deck of tarot cards called the Syrian Starseed Tarot. that are coming soon. And I mention it because during the process of doing these cards with the artist Elisa Barta, we would do these cards over, we used graphic art, so we did them over the internet together on a desk share. And in the middle of working with the images, suddenly faces would appear in the background. And I would say to her, did you put that face there? And she's like, no. It happened so many times that I realized that spirit was just simply moving the pixels around and letting us know that it was a guided process.
Wow.
And it happened a lot. I mean, you'll see it when you see the cards there. There are all these spirit faces in the background. And it's a beautiful tool to teach us that spirit, they can move pixels around. Certainly they can imprint their images on the clouds.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not so unlike the crop circles appearing inside supposedly guarded research areas, you know, the entities of the spirit beings in the sky will just do whatever needs to be done in reverence for all life. That's a big difference, you know.
And the fact that it's time to reach more people now.
Right, right. You know? I wonder about that. Just this week I was lying in bed and I was like, well, what is that thing that's going to kick all of the human race in sync? What is the thing that we're all going to see, experience, feel? What is that thing that's going to ultimately join us in one moment? What is that?
Well, some people think it's going to be the arrival of ET, which certainly would get my attention. Others are, of course, expecting the Independence Day type of arrival of ships at the White House lawn. And I believe that we are in this process of disclosure. I keep talking about this. It's all around us. We're just looking for the ship, the arrival at the Olympics kind of Hollywood idea of what that's going to be, whereas it's happening every day all around us. Good God, they just landed a craft on Mars to search for life. And I'm like,
right.
Is anybody listening to the fact that 5 years ago, if you suggested there could be life on Mars, they would have put you in a nut farm? And now the government is every day telling us, found the water on Mars. Maybe there's a biological fossil somewhere. Now they've put this new craft on, they're looking for life. They're talking about eventually humans. This is disclosure, folks.
Yep. Yes, it is.
To be able to grease 7.5 billion minds into the embracing of such a paradigm is not something you can do with an incident.
Right.
It has to be a gradual greasing, for lack of a better word, of the mind, the cog of the brain that can gently accept it. And it's working.
Right.
Now, your diehard skeptics are talking about, wow, it'd be cool if they found life on Mars. I was younger and being not invited to parties a lot because I suggested that that would be in our lifetime.
I can appreciate that. I can totally appreciate that.
I want to take people back to July 2000 before I move on to the Chilbolton face.
Okay.
July 2000. Isn't this a wonderful site? I had Lucy's permission to use it.
I love it.
It's just so easy to work with. Okay, I want you to look on Knoll down near Avebury Truslow. It's the last one. I think it's the last row. No, it's not. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven rows down, the first one.
Wow, that is really intense.
You want to talk about feeling what I felt and saw. So I want to explain to you that this was another one that was life-altering. So here you've got what I always like to think of as, I call it the iron filings experiment, because in school when I was a kid, they put bars, magnetic bars in the middle of a pile of iron filings, and this formation would show up. Do you know what I'm talking about at all?
Yeah, I do. And then all the little bits would be attracted to the bar itself and then come up to it.
And in this pattern.
Now, I didn't notice the pattern as a kid, but I believe you. I do remember the bars, though.
The bar in the middle, and it was showing the polarity of the magnetic bar. So this crop circle formation is another one that is mind-boggling. I got into that, and this one, I had brought a camera. Didn't work. I had I used to work with dousing rods. Well, I don't use them anymore, but I used to, and they were just going woo 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 woo, spinning around like crazy. And my hair was so electric that it was, when I put my hands through it, it crackled with static electricity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this one, and you know, the places that I'm telling you about now, this was before I was bringing groups with me. Now, I started doing that, I think, in 2004.
Okay.
So this is just little Pat. And I used to rent a car and just go to the crop circle area and find them on my own. So I was alone in these adventures. And in this one, my body was so electric. It was like static electricity that my hair, which is curly as it is, was like an afro sticking up at the top.
Wow. And what kind of changes did you notice in your body in general? Did it make your heart palpitate? Did it make you calmer? Was it...
Oh, this one was electric, because electromagnetism is always a theme that I find recurring in the fields. So
okay.
This was about... It felt electric, even though it was magnetic. The symbolism of the magnetic energy or the magnetic pull, I still felt electrified. I was like, but shouldn't I feel pulled or magnetic? I was like, get out of the rational mind and feel what you feel.
Mm.
And I was electrified. It was as if I was one of those bits of iron filing that was being pulled in. But look at this crop. This is standing wheat we're talking about, not iron filing.
Right.
Isn't it just awesome?
It is absolutely stunning. And again, the precision always speaks to me. And are they usually in wheat, or what is the crop of their choice? Or does it vary? Or
yes, it varies. Hmm. The earlier fields, the few that come up in April are often in rape.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some corn, but usually the crops that I've been in have been wheat.
Wheat, okay.
Yeah, even though they're called corn. They used to be called corn circles because they have come up in corn too. But I only get into wheat because I usually go in July, and that's the wheat time of the wheat fields.
So every year you were just pulled back to the circles for the last 16 years. And
yep.
In these beginning years, it was just you in the rental car and the goddess guiding you. And you went and met them and experienced them. And
because the first year that I went, I had no clue where to go. And I rented a car, and I was stopping off in these little villages and saying, do you know where the crop circles are? And people were like, right. Because they weren't so publicized back then.
Oh.
Then I got word that there was this pub, which is called
That's why I love you, Patricia.
Why is that? Because they just go?
Did you just do it? I'm looking for the crop circles, and you know I'm going to find them, and you too.
Yes, I do. So I stopped into this pub, which for the moment, the name of it escapes me, a famous pub in those years for crop circle enthusiasts. I found the pub, and in the back room in this pub, there were pictures of crop circles and everything, and a map of where they all were. And that started. I met other people who were involved. But again, I repeat, this was 16 years ago, and it's important because a lot of people who have started doing research and are talking crop circles have been doing it for a couple of years. And it was very different back then. The formations, as you're seeing, were just mind-boggling.
Considerably more complex. Absolutely.
Yeah. Through the years, there have been some pretty amazing ones. But, you know, back in the days of things like Woodboro, Hello. And before we move on, there's another one here down at the bottom of the page, in the second row from the bottom. It says North Down Beckhampton. Click on that.
Okay.
I want you to see this because this is a phenomenon that starts to happen in 2003, where you've got the three-dimensional aspect.
That
looks like you are in... Remember what I told you about? I felt like I was the center was down and the formation was over me?
Right.
Here again, the center of this formation feels like it's lower, and it looks like a bowl, doesn't it? It looks like a salad bowl or something?
Yeah, it does. It actually does look like it's lower, and that it those the way that the rings are around it are raising up, and it looks like it's spinning. It has a very similar effect as the Woodboro. If it were very blown up in the Woodboro, really big, just in the center, that's what it reminds me of.
That's what it felt like. It felt the same way, and this time it felt like as I was walking in, it felt like I was walking down up and down a hill. Because you can see it. You can see it's being depicted as a three-dimensional disc.
Wow.
I used to call it, I called it the salad bowl because that's what it felt like. it felt like I would, the inner part of this was definitely deeper in the earth than the outer, which is silly because it's flat earth. And
wow.
Here, then I actually went to sleep in this formation for a couple of hours. Which is kind of weird because people are in and out and you're just gone and you don't know who you're going to be looking up at when you wake up.
Is that common? Now, or would that have been more common then, or has there been a change with that? I mean, is it really a place where you experience people communing with that, or is it a mix of gawkers and curious people and then people who are really communing with the energies? Do you experience a mix of that, or is there a real
I have experienced, not gawkers, I think I've experienced people who are desperately wanting to feel something. In fact, in one of the formations that I've been in, I went into the center and I heard the council say, "We need to feel human emotion." And I was there. There were people all around me, and I was like, "Uh-oh, we want to feel human emotion." And I sat down the middle. I was like in a lotus, and I started to cry. And I had absolutely no connection to the emotion of the crying. I was just serving as a fountain.
Mm.
We want to know it. We need to know human experience, human emotion. And I just sat there, and it just was bizarre because I was absolutely serving that function of letting them feel through my emotional body, but I had no emotion attached to it. You try to cry if you're not emotionally attached to the reason for crying, right?
Right.
And there was a man sitting across from me, watching me, and I just looked at him. I mean, I didn't really want to try to explain it, and he was very compassionate, and finally... after whatever, 20 minutes of this, when I finally left the formation, he ran up with me in a pub nearby and said, "Excuse me, I just have to know. I saw you in the formation. I saw you crying. I just have to know what you feel because I don't feel it." Mm-hmm. And I said, "It's different for everyone." He said, "But what made you cry? What did you feel when you were crying?" And I wasn't about to go into an explanation of the Syrian High Council and my work. And I just said, I can't describe what I feel. I just feel, it's just whatever what you get, you can't describe it, you can't define it. He said, "I so want it." I said, "Well, then just go back into the circle and lie down and see if you can turn off your rational mind." Later that day, I ran into him in another crop circle, and he came over and he threw his arms around me and he said, I got it, Patricia. And it was a big celebration. We hugged everything. But, you know, that mind tries to block getting it. People are really struggling with wanting to be able to experience it, and they're trying to understand it, and the rational mind just shuts it down every time.
Mm. Well, the feeling, it's just, it has nothing to do with the rational mind at all. And so it really doesn't. And we will learn that, you know, we are making progress thanks to people like you who have the courage to go sit in a crop circle and cry in public, you know? I mean, that is such a gift to the powers that be that were wanting that from on high, but also for all of us humans who are really just learning these things. We really have so much to enjoy and learn and experience as a human, you know? It's fantastic.
It doesn't take me any courage to cry. I just let it flow, man.
Yay.
Let it flow. All righty, let's get to the, as again, we're going to run out of time here. I just know it. Let's get to the Chilbolton faith, which I think is probably the most important thing that we've been given in this whole. So you're clicking on 2001.
All right.
August.
Okay. And here we are. And there's some more gears here, yeah.
At the second row, yeah, more gears. There you go. You're starting to get the feel of it.
Yeah, yeah. There's the
okay, there's a lot going on in 2001, including that formation called Milk Hill. I'm not sure we'll do it all, but we must speak about the Chilbolton face. So please click on Chilbolton 2. Okay. Now, this formation, if you scroll down the screen on Lucy's pictures, you will see on the bottom picture the telescope, radar, whatever it is, center.
The observation center, right.
Right in front of it, right under their nose. You've got this gigantic face, and the second one, which is called the Persian carpet, for lack of a more precise term. But I want to talk about now the Chilbolton face.
Wow. Wow, and they came at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. This was precisely a year, 1 year to the day, after the splat came in the field. Okay.
To the day. Wow.
To the day. Now, the first thing that struck me, and not only me, of course, is that it bears a similarity to the face on Mars.
Uh-huh.
You will recall the face on Mars, which is part, it's been called the Sphinx on Mars, and it's been described as being part human and part cat-like or lion-like, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
You look at the line that's going down the face here is a track line for the tractors.
Right.
And some people have said that there is that dual aspect to this face that there is on Mars. That's to be decided, to be discussed in length by other experts, because we can't go there here. But the first thing I want to point out, we can't go there because of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the first thing I want to point out is this face comes down, again, overnight or in 4 hours of darkness. And what we're seeing here now is something completely different. We're not seeing circles. We're not seeing crop laid down. We're seeing pixels.
Oh.
These are pixels. This is an image that is depicted like pixels. So this means intricate, intricate stuff. So take a good look at it.
Right. Now, okay.
There's been all kinds of analysis of this, the way that the nose looks like it's cut in half, representing the dual face of the image of Sidonia. But the thing that remains is that this comes down as pixels of information. The way that the crop would have to be laid for that to occur is beyond reality. In other words, clumps of crop standing, a space, more clumps standing, a space, rather than coming in and making circular, laying the crop down. Can you get the drift?
Absolutely. I absolutely see that detail. And in the little, they're very, apparently, they look quite small, the little tiny sections, the little pixels look quite small. But it also is very square. I mean, it's a rectangle with the pixelation in the middle of it, whereas the other crop circles were more circular in their base. Their whole energetic imprint was very different. It was more circular and more woven in that fabric. But this one is intentionally rectangular with the pixelation, that little tiny bits of things that all come together to make something. It reminds me of a hologram. It reminds me of what...
It reminds me of something I saw once that blew me away, which was some people in New York got like 500 cups of cappuccino. I don't hear about those.
Oh, they made
the Mona Lisa by using different colors of cappuccino, like more or less cream in the coffee. Did you ever see this?
No, I didn't.
This was something, if I could find it, I'll post it on my site. It was basically really talented artists, and they had 500 cups of cappuccino, all varying degrees of cream to brown to tan.
And I can imagine that.
This coloring, they placed them to form the face of the Mona Lisa impeccably.
Wow.
All right, impeccably. You got to see it. Look for cappuccino Mona Lisa for people that are listening after the show. And you'll cappuccino Mona Lisa, I'm sure you'll find it on internet. It is a piece of work. And it's similar to this. It's like using the methodology of what pixel, how pixels work in other venues. So here you've got now, instead of laying the crop down to form geometry, you are leaving it standing, and it's the pieces in between that are, what am I trying to say? You're leaving the majority of the crop is standing up, tufts.
Right.
And it's the pieces in between those that are down that are forming the lines of image that where the pixels would be in, if I'm making myself clear.
Right. Yes, you are making that clear. And that would be the opposite of the other crop circles.
It's a different thing.
Right. The eyes keep talking to me when I look at this one. The way that the eyes call you in, and the way that it really looks like they're looking back at us. And it almost looks like they're trying, or they're, to me, the message would be that this form is very similar to what we're familiar with. It's a very human-looking form, but it's not.
Yes, it looks to me like we are you.
Yes.
Like you.
Yes.
You know, I'm reminded of the biblical term, God made man in his image. It's like E.T. made E.T. in man's image.
Right.
It is a phenomenal crop circle. And you can't even call it a crop circle. It's a formation, if you will.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the fact that it has something to do with the face on Mars. It's that line that you see going diagonally, slightly diagonally through the nose.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the picture of the face on Mars, you will see, again, I prefer if people wait until after the show because we're running out of time, the shadow part of the photograph of the Mars-Sidonia face on Mars.
Mm.
Is at the same angle as that tractor line.
Wow.
The same. You could superimpose it on it would be the same.
Huh.
Which tells me that there is some genius, really just incredible consciousness that's trying to paint it out for us.
Right.
Using these kinds of incredible clues that are impeccable. I mean, it's just no question about it.
No. I mean, at this point, you go way beyond the consideration even of some guys with planks. You know, this is just... This would just not be, you know, this is where you go, okay, guys, that's enough of that. You know, let's get real here.
The researchers talked about this being made up of cells, which is what I was trying to explain before. Dots, or like pixels that are made to make newspaper pictures for people who understand what pixels are. So the pixels were a series of dark standing tufts of wheat, and then the stalks between them were the less of the formation was the stalks that were down, right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, they have a right to their opinion.
What I love that this is, again, right in front of the nose.
Right. Right. I mean, hello. And two of them. And then when we are looking at this phenomena in the 16 years that you've been looking at these, Patricia, and, you know, I know that we all have this, you know, this sort of edge in a certain way because there's all the skepticism, the fear, and all these things. But down deep, you know, we all also, I think we also have a knowing that this is a very, very specific communication, that this is a very specific medium for a higher communication. And I wonder if you can go there with us and share with us what if there was a bottom line in your experience of all these years, in the way that they've evolved, in the way that you've seen the, even the communities evolve and the awareness evolve and all that stuff. Is there a bottom line that you could coin on that with this phenomena?
It's pretty hard to just be able to make a concisive statement that would answer that question. But what I closest I can do is to say that for whatever reason, certain people, a handful, if you consider the size of this planet, people have been called to explore this phenomenon. And many of them have had the responsibility. I really want to emphasize this. Many of them have been responsible observers of the phenomenon, knowing that in some way they're responsible for bringing it to the greater human body of experience. And there are a few people who have profited from it. This calendar makers and all of that. But in earnest, I really do believe that people who are involved in this phenomenon are utterly moved personally on many levels. And let me give you an example. One person I'd like to name is Charles Mallett, who runs the Silent Cafe. If you're listening, Charles, greetings to you. He is a dedicated guy. He opens up this cafe every summer for the crop circles. And there's no profit in it for him. I mean, he sells a few books in there or whatever, but it's basically dedicating his life to helping people understand this phenomenon. And this year, I asked Charles to help me organize a night watch because people are sitting up on top of the mountains in the freezing, chilling England evening weather trying to catch a formation being made either by ETs or whoever, or even by humans, something. Just being lucky enough to be on watching down on the field where one is being formed. And, of course, there have been declarations of people who claim to have seen things happening. But he's done, I don't know how many hundreds of night watches, and he's seen some very interesting things. This is not a guy who is very verbal about what he sees, but in confidence he's told me quite a bit about seeing plasma balls, which is what I saw in 1996. So Charles, this year, I just came back actually from bringing my annual group, which I call the Magical Mystery Tour. And this year, I organized for the diehards like me a night watch on the top of the hill. It was so freezing cold. It was ridiculous. Freezing. We were there from 9 at night until about 5 in the morning. And even though we didn't see anything occur, and Charles said, "You got to be pretty haughty to expect your first night watch catch a UFO, guys. Give me a break." But it was so freezing cold. And yet, I was just so thrilled to be sitting there with these 26 of my people that came with me, who entrusted me enough to let me guide them. And I told them, you know, whether or not we see anything, look at us, look at this, check this out. Here we are, we're crazy Armenians. So, freezing to death at the top of a mountain. This is living. This is life, man. How and there's that aspect about it. There's a feeling of tracing these crop circles and running all over the fields and being involved in it that is something utterly remarkable, joyous. And at a certain point, you let go of, this is what I'm trying to get to, you let go of trying to understand it. After all these years, you just stop trying to understand it. You know you're in it. You're involved in it for whatever purpose. And it is a celebration. And man, do you meet interesting people in these formations. Year after year, I meet a lot of the same people. But unquestionably, we're all driven for some reason to, and gifted to be able to get there.
Hmm. Well, perhaps this is a good segue to share with us how people can learn more about you. Please tell us about your websites and any interesting news you want to share with us as well.
Okay, thank you for that. My website is SyrianRevelations.net. I also have PatriciaCorey.com. I'm kind of all over the place, so anybody that forgets those can just look me up on Google, Patricia Corey. I've got a lot of things coming up. I'm honored to be invited by Ozark Publishing, Dolores Cannon's company, to be a speaker at her upcoming event in London. That's coming up on August 31st to the 2nd of September. I will be speaking there with many other very exciting authors. And what else? I'm teaching. I've just come out with the Tarot deck. I think it's important. I think that the Tarot is a fabulous, exciting tool of transformation, and it needed to be taken to a higher level. So the deck that I've done is, let's call it channeled, lots of support from the Syrians, and it's coming out in September. And I'll be offering my first ever Syrian Starseed workshop in London. And it's so cool because the place I'm doing it is called Good Enough College. Good Enough College! It'll be taught in a place, in a room that is right out of Harry Potter. It's like the Hogwarts Hall. So I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying putting that together because I love humor in the things that we do. And the very big news of the day is, I should probably not announce it yet until it's on paper, but I have been offered an option on a screenplay I've written, which is about the whales and dolphins. So that's another big, big thing. And finally, I have just founded SaveEarthsOceans.org. My website is almost complete. You can take a look at that. We're almost up and running. Lot of things going on in my life.
You go, girl. You go, girl. So Save Earth Oceans, is that, as you said it, SaveEarthOceans.org? Is that where we find that?
It's Save Earth's Oceans with an S, EarthsOceans.org. Okay. And the website is up. It's just not complete yet, but I'm sure you're going to be hoping and asking for support because the slaughter continues, and it is time for the human race to step up to the plate and completely commit to saving the oceans before it's too late. So,
bless you.
I do not get bored. Boredom is something I do not experience.
I can relate. I had to give it up myself. It just, there was no time. Oh, my goodness me. Well, I think we've probably got enough time to do one more crop circle. And would you like to direct us to proper closure for this session?
Okay, let me get the website back up. How much time do we have?
Probably 10 minutes. And then the and I want to also just really encourage people to check out your books. The two that I feel really connected to and have continuing to learn so much from is Atlantis Rising. And I just can't speak enough about that particular book in the conversation of not only our connection with the higher intelligences, but I have found, and I keep reading it, I keep picking it up and rereading sections. It really is helping me have a more open mind about different ways that things might have formed. You know, I just really appreciate Atlantis Rising so, so very much. I really recommend that book of yours, as well as Before We Leave You, the conversation, the very, very, very important conversation about what's happening to the cetacean nations, the whale and the dolphin people, and their plight in the oceans, which the oceans are a lifeline for all of us, not just them. So the message from them is a really a message to the heart of all of us and to life as we know it, and life as it can be even better. That book is also just a beautiful multidimensional exploration of humanity way beyond anything you're going to even imagine in any, you know, traditional course. And I just, those two books just, I have just become so important to me, and I just really want to recommend them. And all, I haven't read all of your books, but those two I have the most intimate relationship with, so I really want to plug those and encourage people to open your mind, you know.
You definitely have to go to Atlantis Rising with an open mind, but I want to say that, first of all, thank you for that endorsement. I'm grateful. It's very exciting to me that information that I channeled over 12 years ago is so absolutely spot on right now, and science is validating a lot of the theories in that book. So it's extremely timely, and it's my favorite of the books. But what's very interesting is that people always report that they read it, reread it, reread it, reread it, and each time they get more information from it. And I can only decipher that I think it's got a lot of codes and a lot of levels of information in it that are not necessarily explainable in 3D terms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It gets under your skin and you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, you said you wanted to close with one of the formations, so let's close with the biggest formation I think that ever came down. It's Milk Hill, Wiltshire, in August 2001.
And I just got word that we don't have to worry about our time limit, so we can relax.
Oh.
Yeah. So we can, there's nobody after us, so we can just relax. And so with respect for your time, because this is all awesome, and this is just so incredible. I just got this little Skype message, so just so you know.
Okay. Well, I could stay on a few more minutes and bring people awareness to this massive, very famous formation of Milk Hill. If people are now clicking on it, look at that.
Wow.
Here you go again with another formation that's very similar in structure to the Stonehenge formation that I, of course, had my experience in. I did not get into this one, however, unfortunately, but just look at this. This was another overnight formation. So, you know, I rest my... Look at the size of it. If you scroll down...
It's huge.
It is gigantic. I'm pretty sure it's the biggest formation that ever came down.
Wow.
And this, too, was an overnighter. So what do you say?
Wow.
You know, to the people who really are clinging to the idea that these are hoaxes, I really invite an explanation how an army of men or women could remotely be able to do something like this in a 3-4 hour span, even 4 or 5 hour span, even in a day.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
It's so beautiful. It's just beautiful.
And look how close it is to the road.
Wow. And it takes up almost the entire field.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost entirely horizontally full.
And what to remember is that these circles are in Fibonacci sequence.
Talk a little bit about the Fibonacci sequence, because that is a very important sequence in all of life, is it not?
Yes, Fibonacci sequence was discovered by a man named Fibonacci as the ratio of growing units. Like, if your first digit in your finger is 1 inch, then the next digit is 1.618, and so on. So the ratio of the small circle to the one bigger would be that the next one is 1.618 in rapport with the size of the first one. Supposedly, this is in perfect Fibonacci sequence. So
so that means that the largest section could be divided by 1.618, and it would come out even.
Each circle is 1.618 larger than the one before it.
Okay, so it squares itself.
Okay. I'm not a mathematician, but that sounds right.
Ha! Oh, no, it just adds 1.618.
Yeah, okay. It increases in that ratio. So look at the size of this and ask yourself how it possibly could occur. And all that I come up with is, thank you, Spirit. Thank you, Spirit, for these gifts. This is such an incredible phenomenon. I really invite people to get their bodies to England next summer, or I'm sure there are still some happening around the world, but by and large, England is still the place. And I think that they're dwindling, but I know there will still be some. It's not over yet. But by all means, you know, if you can experience this firsthand, then you can have a first-hand idea, an experience that's only yours. It doesn't have anyone telling you what it means. It's just you and the phenomenon. And that's where you do your best work. And these are gifts that we still have to work with. So for goodness sakes, if you're at all attracted to what you've learned about over the years watching images of the formations, or if you've been in them, or if what I've spoken about has touched you, then get yourself to them next summer. And by all means, start watching the sky, because, man, a lot is going on. And speaking of that, I'd like to remind people that tomorrow night, between the 12th and the 13th, oh, what a coincidence. That's when the Chill Bolton face came down.
Oh, wow.
Perseid meteor show. The whole sky will be supposedly full of falling stars. Wow, that is really an interesting coincidence.
That certainly is, because didn't something else happen the year before on those same days?
Yeah, it was the big splat, and then there was the Chill Bolton,
and then...
And now here I am talking about it happening tomorrow. That's really interesting.
That's fun.
Yeah,
fun.
Synchronicity.
Right on time. Well,
I would like to also say that I will probably take this conversation back on my show again and finish up what we've started. You're graciously inviting me on to talk to follow that first show that I did, and I thank you for that. And for people to stay tuned to my announcements, and I will bring everyone up to modern times, as they say.
Well, we made it to 2001 this time.
Then it's going to take more than just one more show.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much for coming on and for taking us the next leg of this journey. It's really so complex, this journey. And as we've touched in this conversation, you know, it cuts into so many different aspects of our evolution right across the board, you know, from the most intimate to the most phenomenally out there into the universe. And just thank you so much for being you and for sharing your light in such a lovely, lovely way. And it has been such a pleasure as usual, to share this show with you and the Alchemy of Light broadcast lights up when Patricia Corey comes on. Yay! So,
thank you for all you do, Joan.
It's a pleasure. We're all in this together, you know?
We are indeed.
We are all in this together. So I will take this opportunity to also thank all the listeners for joining us. Thank the good people, Don and Doug, in the back of the house of BDS Radio. And thank all of those that are joining us in spirit and our friends in high places that have joined us. And all the love that's around us and all the love that is nurturing and encouraging us all that we can make this leap, that we can do this, we can return to our place in the universe community, and how exciting it is. Just look at these crop circles. I mean, I want to learn how to make these, you know?
Well, try to get yourself over there with me next summer.
Hey, you know what? Things are looking like that is entirely possible. I see possibility in that. I absolutely do. So.
That's manifested.
Okay. All right, Patricia. Oh, well, and thank you all. This has been fantastic, and I will see you in a fortnight. And do pay attention to Patricia Corey and Beyond the Matrix for the next leg of this awesome tour. Do you have any final words you'd like to say before we close out, sweetie?
Yep, I do. Follow your dreams. It's short and sweet, but follow your dreams. Don't be bogged down in the mundane. Don't stop believing that everything is possible. Follow your dreams. Follow your heart.
Nice. All right, with that, we will sign off the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Take good care of yourselves. Take good care of each other. And thank you again, Patricia.
And thank you. Bye-bye.